อาจารย์ could you please explain about the Santati Gana and Samuba Gana and Kicca Gana, which is the compactness of continuity, compactness of grouping, and compactness of functions. As I know,
what is it?
Santati.
Yeah, Santati Gana. As I think, because of so that we may easily take for something or body or someone.
Last moment has fallen away, and the next one is the santati preceding the next one immediately, and that is the meaning of santati. Like now, just like now. The last moment has fallen away, succeeded by the next one, and that is santati.
For other people, we are talking about the continuity of cheetahs. We were discussing yesterday about how at any moment in life there is one cheetah following another, one moment of experience following another, never any gap in between. And so now we're talking about how each one follows. So the last one is a condition for the next one. And this is what is meant by continuity. And because the cheetahs arise and fall away so fast in rapid succession, it seems like there is something permanent. It seems that what is seen lasts. It seems that there is something actually here that lasts. But actually, there is just one cheetah following another one. What is your interest in santati or continuity?
I'm asking about continuity and grouping and function also, because as cheetah, as the cheetah do the same function, many cheetah do the same function, arise and pass away, and a new one arise and pass away. That is one which may lead to, which may make us think that something similar or continuity or become a grouping or so could you please, I think it may easily lead to the wrong view of something last or something
there is the appearance of continuity and the appearance of grouping. Because it seems that, for example, consciousness is continuous and different rupas are experienced so quickly that there is the appearance of people and things, the grouping. It is understanding that dispels the ideas of continuity and grouping, as I understand it. So it's the appearance of continuity rather than actual continuity that is being spoken of. The appearance of grouping rather than actual grouping.
If one doesn't know yet the function of each citta, one has doubt whether it arises and falls away or not. But if one knows much more about each moment of citta performs its own function, then the first moment of life has arisen and fallen away, never to arise again. So there wouldn't be anyone here. But since citta follows it immediately by the power of being the continuity factor, that's why it keeps on arising and falling away. And that one which has gone conditioned the next one by one paccaya, anantara paccaya. So after the first moment of birth, there must be citta follows, right? The first one that cannot perform the function of rebirth at all, because that is performed by the first moment of life. So the next one, so very fast, just follow, conditioned by the same karma. That's why there must be the same personality from birth up to now, from moment to moment. Seeing, before seeing, there is no seeing. Is there no citta before seeing? at moment of sleep, no seeing at all. But one wakes up, sometimes seeing or hearing occur. By conditions, not at anyone's will at all. Do you remember you slept last night and what wake you up? The first moment after sleeping, what is there? By conditions. No one can expect whether it would be seeing or hearing or thinking at all. All depends on conditions each moment, right now.
And actually, it's not because the cittas arise and fall away and condition each other that there is the taking for something or whole. It is because of the ignorance and the wrong understanding about those cittas and those dhammas that there is the taking for something or a whole. So it's not, it's because of the not understanding the reality as it really is.
Santatigana also refer to rupa.
So when we're referring to rupa, there are different stages of the rupa. The rupa has four stages. There's the birth of the rupa, the arising of the rupa, the decay of the rupa, the death of the rupa. Because actually, even visible object, it has to arise, it has to stay for an instant, and it has to fall away, it has to decay, it has to fall away.
And the rupa is quite different from the nama. That's why there must be different conditions for its arising. That's why some rupas conditioned by kamma and some rupas conditioned by temperature, utu, and some rupas conditioned by ahara, and some are conditioned by citta. So they have different conditions for their arising. So how can that be the continuity like citta? Because citta experiences, but the rupa cannot experience. So the conditions for the arising of rupa must be one of the four, not like now, see? It has to be just like now. Thank you. What conditioned by citta, and what conditioned by ahara, and what conditioned by utu, and what is conditioned by kamma? Without these, no rupa can arise. Like the trees and the plants are conditioned by utu, just utu only. No citta to condition the tree to arise. No kamma condition the tree to arise. And no ahara for the tree to eat in order to maintain life. So it depends just on temperature only for the plant or that which is not human being's body.
So also it depends on the context when you read about santati or continuity, whether it's referring to cittas or rupa. So you have to consider carefully.
And for rupa, there are the terms upajya, santati, that is for rupa, upajya, santati, shirata, and nirata. But for nama, ubada, didi, panga, different, because they are different.
That's for a single rupa.
Yes.
So
just one single rupa. Upajaya, continuous santati, until it's aged, charata, and then anicchata, falling away. Not like human being, not like citta.
And that's why it's said that actually, because we say citta lasts as long as 17 moments of rupa, or citta lasts as long as actually 68 phases of rupa, because each rupa can be divided into four phases, because it has to arise, it has to exist at that moment. It has to decay, it has to fall away.
So in terms of compactness of continuity, or in compactness of grouping, or compactness of function, is that refer to one single rupa, or it refer to the combination?
What do you mean by grouping?
Samubhagana.
Pardon?
As I read, there are santatigana, samubhagana, and kichagana, which is samubhagana, which is the compactness of grouping.
What do you mean by grouping?
That's why I would like Ajahn to explain, because
in order to understand reality, if we talk about just one kind at a time, one citta, one cittasika, one rupa, it's clearer.
But because those rupa those reality has the same function or has the same characteristic.
I think in your context you're talking about cittas, not rupas here, and about how, as we've said, each citta conditions the next citta by continuity. But because of ignorance and understanding and misunderstanding, the nature is covered up, so it seems that there is some compact whole. It seems that there is a thing, a table, or a tree, or a person, but actually there is just one citta conditioning another. But because of misunderstanding, it seems like it's a whole or a group at that moment, not just a reality, a dharma.
So it's not that if there is right understanding about this compactness of continuity or grouping or compactness of function, then the wrong view or the idea of someone or something will be less, or?
To my understanding, there are ideas of continuity and compactness now. But as understanding develops, it dispels those notions. So it's not a question of getting rid of the idea of compactness so that understanding can develop. It's a matter of developing understanding, which then enables one to see through the apparent compactness and continuity.
Is the cake sweet? Is it? Oh, no, not sweet. Yes or no? A cake. Or a date. Is it sweet or not?
Sweet.
The date, the fruit. Sweet or not sweet? It's sweet. Is it soft? But softness is not sweetness. Different kind of rupa. Without the four primary rupas, that which is hard or soft, heat or cold, for example, there cannot be anything seen or tasted at all.
Not only one single rupa which brings the sweet or the soft, but many rupa together.
We are talking about the eight inseparable rupas right now. Just one unit. You may say one group, but it's so very, very tiny.
But I think that is a problem. It bring back to a single rupa. It will be clear. But
why not? Because softness is not heat. Hardness isn't cold.
How can
we mix them?
The point is, Lan, that because actually at any moment softness or hardness or heat or sweetness appears, but actually it seems that one is tasting a sweet date, something that is sweet and soft, because it's taken as a whole or as something, or there is a grouping of the different characteristics, but actually when there's understanding, only one characteristic appears at a time. So no confusion then about how it can be sweet and soft. So actually there is, we can say there is grouping, because at least 8 rupas have to arise together. In a group they arise together, but what is understood is just one characteristic at a time.
So grouping is not in the sense of that many same rupa have the same characteristic.
Every rupas can be broken into very tiny particle that cannot be broken up anymore. Just think about that. Like the dust, even that is seen, but that which is unseen, there must be there too, at moment of birth, for example. So in a particular object or particle, there must be 8 different kinds of rupa arising together, inseparable. But they cannot be the same. Heat is heat, soft is soft.
If bring back to a single rupa, then no problem or no wrong view. But the matter is that its combination
with spaces in between each particle. You can break anything up, even this, even this, even that, because of space in between each particle. If in that very tiny one, the one which it cannot be broken anymore, there are 8 indivisible rupa. So 8, not one, different ones of 8. So how many rupas? Break it up. Uncountable. Dust can be seen, but it is smaller than that. Can you see dust now?
Impossible.
And that is smaller than that, because what is seen is there must be softness and hardness and other 7 rupas together.
I think the terms continuity and compactness appear in the teachings in a number of different contexts. Certainly in the Visuddhimagga they appear in the section dealing with samadhi as well as the section dealing with panya. I'm not clear what particular aspect you are asking about. Perhaps you could explain what you understand by continuity and compactness in the first place, so then we could address more directly your.
Because I think that because of those, then it may lead to the idea of something continuity and grouping and same function, which may lead to the easily lead to the idea of body or someone or something.
Could you give an example of what you mean by continuity and compactness? You're asking about them, but
because I think that these issues or these matters perhaps we have to let the idea the wrong view of someone or something, yeah. Or the body
is seeing you.
It's not me.
What does seeing see?
Seeing sees visible object.
So at moment of seeing, it can see only visible object. It cannot taste. It cannot experience hardness and softness. Right? But it's there. Otherwise Buddha didn't teach about this at all, because people couldn't understand it at all if he didn't teach about it. Reality as it is, to break up the idea of self and permanent things. Is there spaces in between this?
Because there's a space, yeah. In between.
Can the seeing see?
The seeing cannot see it.
So it does mean that one can see, but there can be the understanding of each reality through different doorways.
So can you explain more in related to those characteristics of the rupa?
So each rupa now, whether it's hardness or visible object or sound, each rupa can be classified or can be referred to as khanda. Because each rupa arises and falls away, this is the characteristic of khanda. So each rupa has in common that it is rupa khanda, no matter sound, no matter visible object, no matter this sound or the sound now. Each sound arises and falls away and is completely different from each other sound. But each one is rupa khanda because each one has that same characteristic of being the reality which cannot experience anything. Yesterday we talked about how there are two kinds of realities, namas, which can experience an object, citta and cetasika, and rupa, the reality that cannot experience anything. So each rupa, no matter visible object or sound, each one is rupa khanda. It arises, it falls away, it has that same characteristic of not being able to experience anything.
So is that, let's say about the cup or the glass, is it possible that the compactness of grouping there or the compactness of function there, which many rupa with the same characteristic of hardness, so that's why it bring up which which we often take it as a glass or a cup.
Now it is thinking about a story of rupas, but at the moment of thinking about, well, there is the compactness and different rupas, actually at this moment it's just a moment of thinking, but the visible object is seen at that moment. There is no idea at that moment of understanding visible object. There's no idea of compactness or of any other rupas at that moment. So just one reality that appears at a time only, and after that there could be thinking about grouping or compactness or continuity or anything. But at the moment when visible object appears and is understood, no thought of compactness or grouping at all, because it is just that rupa khanda that arises and falls away at that moment, which has its particular characteristic.
A moment ago, Jonathan asked, I think at least twice, what do you understand by continuity and grouping? What do you mean by that?
Continuity in the sense that the rupa with the same characteristic arise and the next generation keep on, that's why it bring up to the what we may take that for a cup or a coconut, and the grouping in the sense of that though with the same characteristic and the function in the sense that those rupa with the same function.
Can we talk about the function of rupas?
So could you
explain? Does hardness have a function?
So could you please explain about the kichagana?
About
kichagana.
Do the teachings talk about the function, the kicha of rupa?
Kicha function.
I see. Yeah.
Hardness, what is the function of hardness?
That's what I read in the book, that's why I have to ask you.
Are you sure?
About the function of rupa?
Kicca gana, she said. Gana is compactness, right?
Yes.
Gana is the compactness.
Kicca gana is translated as a compactness of function.
You mean kana gana, the group?
Yes.
Right?
Not function.
Not function.
But there's one.
Kicca is function and
So what does it mean? Kicca is one word and gana is another word. Different word.
Rupas don't have functions. The characteristic of hardness is it's hard. It doesn't have a function. Seeing has the function of experiencing visible object. Sanya has the function of marking or remembering. So we cannot refer to the function of rupas.
So perhaps I need to check more about that, because that's what I read in the book, that about the, they mentioned the kicchakana.
Function, kicca, refers to the task or the job of the citta or cetasika. Each citta or cetasika has its particular function. And the compactness or kana is because of the all dharmas arise and fall away, but they're not understood. So it seems that there is compactness or whole. So this is something different.
I'll just read something. The characteristic of impermanence does not become apparent, because when rise and fall are not given attention, it is concealed by continuity. Is this what you're talking about?
Again?
The characteristic of impermanence does not become apparent, because when rise and fall are not given attention, it is concealed by continuity. And the characteristic of not-self does not become apparent, because when resolution into the various elements is not given attention, it is concealed by compactness.
Is it not now? Who knows that seeing arises and falls away each moment, each unit? They cannot be 12 together or 10 together at all at moment of seeing, and there is thinking about what is seen in between each process of seeing.
However, when continuity is disrupted by discerning rise and fall, the characteristic of impermanence becomes apparent in its true nature.
Can that be developed little by little, gradually? Have confidence in the teachings of the truth? That sense is true. Right understanding can understand and penetrate or discern the true nature of it.
When the resolution of the compact is effected by resolution into elements, the characteristic of not-self becomes apparent in its true nature.
Can you tell me what are you reading so that I can read more about?
It's better to quote from the texts themselves than by other authors or writers who have their own ideas. This is the problem, because they may use the same words, but they give their own interpretation or idea. So it seems like one is quoting from the teachings, but actually it's just the writer's own idea. That's why the terms get mixed up and confused.
I'm going back to Pariyatti and Patipatti, because it's very important that we go, we develop mental development, not just today, but I also know that for the that mental development is one of the three things any follower must do, lay follower must do, is
not something someone does.
Yes, just understand that.
Mental development is not about something to be done.
Yes. First, precept. Precept. And second, samadhi. And the third one is mental development. So can you explain more about the first two?
You mean sila, samadhi, and panya,
exactly,
right?
Yes.
Yeah. Before all, we better understand what is sila. all the words of the teachings should be beginning with what is it, in order that we can understand better and better. So if we are going to talk about sila, what is sila? If there is no understanding of sila, it cannot be more understanding. So what is sila?
Sila, from my understanding, is doing or saying good.
Yeah.
I mean, like kusala thing for us and for the other people.
Without citta, can they be speaking, doing?
Cannot.
The body be sila?
Cannot.
No. So it's only citta. That is another way to classify jittas, because there's so many enormous, innumerable rupa. Jitta. See, uncountable jittas now. So just talk about what is sila. It is the manners of jitta and jetasika in a day, in life, everyday life. So there are the akusla, unwholesome jittas. So it speak and does many unwholesome ways. So the moment of akusala citta is akusala sila in Tipitaka. There are three kinds of sila from the very beginning. The kusala sila, unwholesome sila, according to unwholesome jittas, and kusala sila, wholesome sila, because that moment jitta is wholesome. So the way it does in a day is kusala.
Again, and again please.
Kusala sila.
Sila.
Akusala sila.
Akusala sila.
Another one is apayakata sila.
Apayakata. Kata.
Sila.
Yeah. What does it mean?
Whatever is not kusala and akusala, it is apayakata.
Apayakata. Yes.
So usually it's the manners, the way of citta of arahata, because we cannot have kusala. Apayakata, kiriya, kusala. We can have only kusala or akusala only. When we talk about javana, kusala, akusala, and apayakata, so there are three kinds of sila, akusala, kusala, and apayakata. Or kusala, akusala, apayakata.
So sila is a function of citta.
It's the manners. It's the way.
Yeah. The way of the citta.
Yeah.
So it's not like we try to avoid killing.
No one at all.
Yeah.
Without citta, there is no sila. The rupa cannot be sila.
So
usually in a day, what kind of sila is there?
More akusala.
Akusala sila. And at moment of good deeds, good speech, it is kusala sila.
Good deeds?
Good speech.
Good speech?
It's done by kusala citta. So at that moment, it is kusala sila.
Yeah.
Okay. So there is the sila which abstain from ill deeds, which is virati cetasika. Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Not citta. So we are talking about citta and cetasika, different functions.
Because restraining from, if there's the impulse to speak harshly, but one restrains in a wholesome way, then that is wholesome sila, even though there's no overt deed or act to be seen for it.
Yes.
So it's always a matter of the consciousness rather than the bodily action or speech.
So normally there's a formality in in the temple.
The point to remember is, like we discussed yesterday, actually in life, there are only citta, cetasika, and rupa.
Rupa, yeah.
So no matter we're talking about sila, dana, bhavana, no matter we're talking about going to the temple, no matter we're talking about coming here for a discussion, no matter what we're talking about, actually, there is only citta, cetasika, and rupa. No one who can do anything at all, ever. And this is why, just now, it was said in the text, it is by understanding elements that it's understood that actually there is no self, that dhammas are anatta. Because by considering that actually in life there are only elements, there is eye sense is an element, visible object is an element, seeing is an element, sound, ear sense, hearing are elements, and so on. There is an element which refers to cheetahs that just experiences objects through the sense store, another element, and then there is an element which consists of any other kind of cheetah, and then there is an element which includes mental factors, other rupas or nibbana. Actually, nothing else in life apart from these different elements which the Buddha taught. So no matter the topic, whether it is sila or samadhi, actually only elements, only different realities. So as Ajahn said, sila refers to the nature or the behavior of citta at this very moment. So at this moment, after moments of seeing or hearing, there is either kusala or akusala sila, even now, depending on whether there is wholesome or unwholesome citta following the seeing or hearing. When going to the temple, this is a long, long story about countless different kinds of cheetahs, moments kusala citta and moments of akusala citta, wholesome sila and unwholesome sila.
So
we cannot say this activity is sila and this activity is not sila, because it is, refers to the nature of citta.
So the words bhutang sarang kacchami or thammang sanghang sarang kacchami, but in Vietnamese words is I want to take a refuge in the Buddha. So and, I there.
Yeah, and who says that?
I understand.
Not everyone. That's why one has to be so very truthful when we say buddhang saranang kacchami, not listen to the other's words at all. And dhammang saranang kacchami, not follow the other's words. And sangkhang saranang kacchami, by then, the development of right understanding will lead to sangkhang saranang kacchami.
And also taking precept, also the same thing. I try to avoid killing.
It's citta and cetasika, and actually it is cetana, cetasika.
But every day we do the same thing. I try to avoid.
We have to use the word I. Even Buddha himself used the word Tathagata. Because otherwise, who knows? He's talking about him or the others. Other citta, cetasikas, or this particular one, which is the enlightenment.
But using the words I, but not meaning that. Meaning paramatha.
Even at this moment, if one closes one's eyes and I say I try to avoid killing, at those moments, kusala citta or akusala citta? Depending.
No one else.
For one person it may be with attachment, for one person there may be kusala cittas, for one person the wrong idea that I can do something, for one person the idea I will get a favorable rebirth. So different kinds of cheetahs at each moment. So we cannot tell from the outer appearance or the words that are spoken, because it depends on the nature of cheetah at each moment, whether it's wholesome or unwholesome, whether it's kusala or akusala sila at that time.
So sila also a cheetah sika?
when we talk about anything different from the faculty of experiences, they are all cetasikas, different cetasikas. Cetana cetasika or virati cetasikas. That's why we do not talk much about the unwholesome sila, because it's usually there from morning to night. But we talk about the kusala sila, to know the different degrees of wholesomeness.
Uh-huh.
Because all wholesome moments must be sila. It's wholesome. So it is kusala sila. And that's why in Visuddhimā refers to vārita sila and charita sila.
Vata.
Vārita sila.
Vārita.
Sila.
And.
Charita. Charita sila.
Sila, okay.
Vārita sila, ajahn.
Virati cetasika, abstaining, yeah, from ill deeds.
Like now when one shows some kindness, then it is a moment of charita sila, but at the moment of when one is about to speak harshly and one abstains at that moment, it is varita sila at that moment. Mm. So sila can be of two kinds, varita and charita sila.
Right. So back to the Eightfold Path. Back to the Eightfold Path. Sila
is the varita, the varita sila at those moments of abstaining from wrong speech or wrong deeds.
Right action
actually refers to the moment of abstaining from wrong speech or wrong action. So it is varita sila that is being referred to at that moment.
Ajahn, can I just ask a question there? Abstaining from wrong speech
and wrong deeds.
In wrong deeds or
for varita sila,
yeah.
Because they are viriti cetasikas.
I understand that. But what I would like to clarify is that can be done with the idea of self.
Different moment. Because at any moment of kusala, there cannot be a kusala cetasika arising.
What I wanted to clarify really too was eightfold path sila, when you just, well, when there is restraint, but there is, it's kusala, but still with the idea of I.
When there is no understanding, can it be sila of the Eightfold Path?
No. So that's what seemed to be being implied, though.
So at the moment of having right understanding, it is wholesomeness.
Yes.
So it is sila.
Yes. Yeah, I understand that. But it seemed to be saying that that restraint.
Because all kinds of kusala is sila.
Yes, true. It's reached
so
the
we don't mind a thing about sila, not a sila.
But it doesn't have to be Eightfold Path sila.
But that has to, if it is Eightfold Path sila, it has to be with the right understanding.
Yes, no, that's obvious, Sarah. Yes, Sarah, that's obvious.
At that
moment.
Otherwise, it cannot be referred to as Eightfold Path sila.
Why I spoke up was it seemed to be saying, what seemed to be saying was that because there was restraint, that was Eightfold Path.
That's why we have to talk in details about the Eightfold Path, not just the name. For example, if there is no understanding enough, there wouldn't be conditions for right awareness, with right awareness, to understand whatever we are talking about right now. About realities, about that which is now appearing. The past has gone. No one can understand the truth of it. The present hasn't come yet. No one can know what would be next. But at this very moment, it's time to develop right understanding, or developing begins to understand what is there now. So for kusala sila, there are more to say. The four monks, Patimokkha Samvara sila. Now we come to another higher Sangvara sila or Indriya Sangvara sila. At moment of awareness arises, it is aware of a reality right now. But it's not panya. So it is adi sila with adi citta or samadhi. So when we talk about sila of the Eightfold Path, it have to be Indriya Sangvara sila. Because now The monks observing precepts.
Yeah.
It is Patimokkha Sangvarasila, but not Indriya Sangvarasila. For monk, they have to be aware of the manners of the body, the way they eat, walk, talk, or whatever. That is the Indriya Sangvara, other than the Patimokkha Sangvarasila, and also Paccaya Sannittasila. The moment of taking or receiving or whatever, one has to consider the monkshood, the way monks live, even before eating. It's moment of thinking about the about the wholesomeness of the person who give food to them. Because of their wholesome citta, which give them food, they develop right understanding to deserve what they are given.
So
each meal.
So that's a real respectful consideration
right.
of the donor.
Right. Samvara is
guarding. This is actually related to the question you asked in the main session when we were talking about guarding the sense faculties or the eye doors, like when we were talking about guarding the doorways. So this is Indriya Samvara Sila, when it is guarding the doorways with understanding of reality. So this is the higher Sila. Yeah.
Samvara means all around, complete.
So there are so many things to learn, to understand.
Yeah.
And without this, there must be the idea of self. That's why Buddha taught in details of everything in order to have less and less attachment, even to the idea of self. I'm listening, and so forth. Or reading with the idea of self. I would like to understand or to know, but not to see the value of understanding the truth as the truth, not I. So it's not just not knowing anything and just talk about the number and the name of the Eightfold Path. It has to begin with right understanding. And it's not just as we hear only here so much to understand before it can condition right awareness. So one can see that when it's not right understanding, it is kusala, wholesome, without right understanding. And usually it is unwholesome moment.
Interesting.
So whenever there is not understanding and it's not wholesome, it is unwholesomeness. Sitting without understanding, not kusala. It's not the moment of dana or sila or bhavana. So it's motivated by the idea of self. The attachment is so very crafty. It follows anywhere, everywhere. It's behind oneself, in front oneself, by the sides. But no one knows. Only right understanding can know. That's why the development of right understanding will lead to the eradication of defilements.
So many degrees and levels and kinds of sila, but each one refers to the nature of citta, not anyone who follows or does or abstains.
So Eightfold Path refer to every citta moment.
Not here, not now. Because it's right understanding, not anyone at all. And right understanding of the path.
Can you make it clear, please?
From what I understood then, is Ajahn, when you asked that question about Eightfold Paths, you said not now. However, by listening, understanding will grow, can grow to that point of it being now. But at the moment, it's not Eightfold Path.
Without right awareness of the right object, see, it's not Eightfold Path. So there must be the understanding of right awareness too, not only right understanding.
the Eightfold Path refers to the mental factors that arise contemporaneously at a moment of awareness or understanding. Those mental factors include the three abstentions that you've spoken about. When they arise with right understanding, which is aware of the characteristic of a reality, they are of the path. But the same mental factors can arise without understanding. There can be abstention without understanding, of course, because there can be abstention by someone who hasn't even heard of the teachings, for example. So at such moments, they are not of the intensity of path, because they don't arise with the appropriate other mental factors. So they're not sama. They are wholesome, but not of the path.
So wholesome is conditioned to effort path. Like sila, samadhi also, and bhavana also conditioned to panya, like that.
The conditions for panya are what we've been discussing here. Hearing the teachings and reflecting on the teachings.
So every moment, there is citta and citta-sika. And the next moment also na citta and citta-sika. And some citta-sika with right understanding and with the panya. This moment is eightfold path, and the next moment not just like this. Is it correct?
In order to understand the eightfold path, we have to understand different levels of sati awareness, because it has to be right awareness only, which arises with the right understanding at moment of eightfold path. So what is awareness?
Awareness. To the function of citta, awareness of
chetasika. It's a chetasika.
Awareness chetasika?
Yeah.
Sati. Chetasika.
Asati.
And it arises with wholesome cittas, not any citta. It's not the conventional idea of awareness or mindfulness at all. So forget about the conventional idea of awareness. It has to be a wholesome
citta. So I heard that.
So at that moment, it is aware of the object it guards against unwholesomeness at that moment.
So I heard about seeing. Seeing is chakku vinyana, right? Then chakku vinyana aware of visible object.
No, chakku vinyana or seeing experiences visible object.
Not aware.
It's not aware. No. That's maybe used in a translation, but forget about awareness of that context. When we're talking about sati, which has a characteristic of awareness, it arises with wholesome cittas, not at the moment of seeing, not at the moment of the result cittas that immediately follow, but at the moment when the citta is wholesome, there is sati at that moment.
So only sati can be aware.
It is the characteristic or the function of sati be aware.
So that misuse word. Yeah.
Okay. And at a moment of kindness or generosity, sati arises with the kindness or generosity and is aware at that moment.
Yes.
It guards against unwholesomeness, but we cannot say it is the Eightfold Path or leading to the Eightfold Path. So it's only the awareness that arises with right understanding that is aware of reality that leads to the Eightfold Path. Even at this moment, there is wise considering, there is understanding about seeing or visible object, not Eightfold Path yet.
Okay, so sati happen when we doing good deed or good speech.
It's not you. But sati is aware of giving at moment that it's giving.
When the citta is wholesome, sati is aware, not when I am giving a gift.
Yeah.
Forget about the idea of I am doing something, because then it's a whole long story, an idea of I am doing something, a situation. Yes, it's not the
understanding.
It's not the understanding of citta, cetasika, and rupa.
Yeah.
So from now we use the term sati.
Yes.
Because we can understand better.
Yes.
Sati arises with our wholesome jittas. With our sati, jitta cannot be wholesome. And there are altogether 25 wholesome cetasikas, and not sati alone, which arise at that moment. There must be more cetasika to arise with.
For example?
For example, patsa, contact cetasika.
Uh-huh.
Vedana, sanya, the seven universal cetasikas arising with each citta, each moment. Not enough. There must be other cetasikas as well, and included the sopana cetasika, wholesome cetasika, such as sati, hiri, ottapa, alopa, adosa, amoha.
For my friends who are interested in meditation and calm, another mental factor is pasadi cetasika, which is calmness. And calmness arises with each wholesome citta. So just as we cannot say whenever we have the idea, I will give a gift or I will make a donation at the temple, we cannot say sati is there, because it depends on each citta whether it is wholesome or not.
Yeah.
In the same way, like even now while we're having discussion, when the citta is wholesome, there is sati and there is calmness at that very moment. Pasadi cetasika.
So even we do dana at that moment.
We don't do dana.
Sorry.
Forget the idea.
Sorry, just habit.
I mean
a sati.
Even when we think that we are
doing
dana.
Yeah, sorry. Even at that moment, dana is one.
But you cannot speak this to any other people.
Yeah. at that moment, wholesome citta is there, and sati is there, but the next moment, maybe not.
Right. So when we, conventionally speaking, are giving dana, like we invite everyone for lunch, for example, actually, so many different. Cheetahs which are result, vipaka cheetahs at moments of seeing and hearing, kusala cheetahs being concerned for others' welfare and having kindness, akusala cheetah attachment to the offering,
so
attachment to the food.
During dana, many uncountable moments.
Yes.
So maybe only one sila, one moment with sila, another sati. And all that, no. All unwholesome.
Many more unwholesome.
Many more unwholesome.
Yes.
Oh, dangerous.
Not just one. There would have to be many kusala citta too.
Ah. Okay.
And so actually, in the true sense, we cannot say all those moments are dana, because the unwholesome moments cannot be dana.
Yes.
So this is why, to be more precise, there are moments of dana, but moments that are not dana, moments of metta and moments that are not metta.
Any.
Like while we're sitting here or sitting at home in the morning, when the citta is kusala or wholesome, there is calmness, pasadi cetasika. But at moments of attachment, like when we would like to have a result or would like to feel good during the day, at those moments of pleasant feeling, no calmness. So calmness can only arise with wholesome cheetahs, kusala cheetahs.
I, at the moment of wholesome moment, I feel a little bit confused about the function of cheetah, of sanya and awareness.
Because
it
seems
to do the
eye.
Same function.
Because of the eye. I'm trying to know. It's impossible. Because all dharmas are anatta, who knows when there will be awareness of that very particular object by itself, not by I'm trying. Will you try again?
Not try again, but not certified.
But it will happen again because of ignorance and the clinging to the idea of self. Always there.
So sanya and sati, they have different functions. Sanya is remembering at that moment, but sati is being aware of wholesomeness. But if one tries to pinpoint or look for it or catch it, then for sure there's no sati at those moments, even though sanya is still marking and remembering.
By the way, when you say something about atta sanya and anatta sanya,
who is this? Visible object cannot be any one at all. What is this?
As I know, there are six sanya, rupa sanya, ganda or something.
Six dhavis.
Yeah. So those are anatta sanya.
If there is right understanding of reality at that moment, it is anatta sanya. If it's clear that it's visible object seen, it is anatta sanya at that moment. But when it's someone or something, if it's a thing that is touched now, it is atasanya at that moment, marking it in that way, taking it for something.
If it's not vipassana jnana, it must be always atasanya, because reality does not appear as itself, as no one there at all. It's the moment of the beginning of having atasanya. But the atasanya hasn't been eradicated completely yet, but it's the beginning of seeing realities as they are during the moments of vipassana jnana. So now atasanya, I am thinking, I wanting to understand what is seen. No matter when and where, the characteristic of sanya, which marks reality as not self, hasn't happened yet, does not appear as it is, to the highly developed panya, which we say vipassana jnana, there must be atasanya. And it does mean that the first vipassana jnana has eradicated all the atasanya. Not yet, just right at that moment, to see or to understand the difference between san atasanya and anatasanya. That as long as vipassana jnana hasn't occurred yet, there must be atasanya.
But we know that the conditions for satipanthana to arise, it's satirasanya. So in that case, there must be sanya, which is anatta sanya, at the theoretical level, right?
But it's not the anatta sanya which really experience the realities as they are.
What is that when Buddha recognize Sariputta or his disciple? What is the sanya then?
Could there be any misunderstanding or doubt or confusion at that moment? Could there be taking it for someone or something at that moment?
For a Buddha who has fully enlightenment, then of course there's no such wrong view. But I want to ask that the sanya when...
So it cannot be any atasanya. So it's not a matter of the words or that are used, or the Pali terms or the names that are used. It's not a matter of whether one says Suchin or Sarah, it's a matter of the understanding at that moment when wrong view has been eradicated by the Sotapanna. No more atasanya, no more misunderstanding at all.
So whenever there is an idea of that my life or my family, my job, the process or the period. So is that the wrong view there, or just the thinking? Because as I know, among the 20 kinds of sakya ditti, all are referred to the reality. Which are the khandhas?
All wrong views completely eradicated by the Sotapanna. So if the Buddha or even the Sotapanna is here and they learn the name of the different people here, no idea of someone or something as existing. It's clear that only there is only citta and cetasika and rupa, no idea of I am performing dana or my friend is lifting the microphone. In reality, it's clear what are conceptual terms and what are absolute realities. No doubt for a moment.
I'm asking for our, for us, our ordinary people, that whenever we, there is an idea that my family or my job or the period or the process or the style of life, which are all the concepts. So is that at that moment are just thinking, or is that the wrong view?
It could be either, couldn't it? We can't say. There can be thinking, as the Buddha pointed out many times, with attachment, tanha, thinking with conceit, mana, thinking with wrong view, ditti. That's when the citta is akusala. When the citta is kusala, of course, there are none of those things. So one can't generalize and say conceptualizing about people and things is necessarily a wrong view. Different moments.
When there is understanding of realities, the question doesn't arise, because there's no thought for an instant that one shouldn't use names, Suchin, Jonathan, or Lan, or talk about tables and chairs. No confusion between what are ultimate realities and conventional realities at that moment of understanding. So development of understanding doesn't mean that one lives one's life in some unnatural way, not using names or not mentioning concepts or not thinking of concepts. Life carries on just as usual, but no misunderstanding of what is real and what is concept. So this is why it said it is through the understanding of realities there is the understanding of conventional world. But without the understanding of realities, no understanding of conventional world, because what are concepts are taken for being realities.
It's not necessary to try and pinpoint either, because then it's trying to understand a particular reality. But we know that the norm is for akusala citta to arise, and that will be usually with attachment, conceit, or wrong view. It's by developing understanding that it becomes clearer and clearer what is the true nature of the present moment reality. But we can't choose which reality that will be.
At moment of knowing what's what, is that wrong understanding? This is the question. At moment of knowing what is what, is that wrong understanding?
Wrong understanding of what? You got it right.
Yeah, as bottle, microphone, table. Is that wrong understanding?
It's not.
It's not. Otherwise, Buddha and those who have enlightened and eradicated the kilesa cannot know anything at all, whether what is what.
And it means they cannot communicate with anyone either.
Among the 20 kinds of sakya ditti, all are referred to the khandhas, not any concept. So could you please...
Because visible object now, if it's not understood as visible object, it is taken for being the object of my experience, or it's taken for something. So what is taken, mistakenly taken for being atta, are actually just those different khandhas, like visible object or sound. If there's no sound, how can sound be taken for something? Or if there's no hearing, how can it be taken for my experience or my dana?
But for most everybody, who ordinary people, who they even don't have the idea of the visible object or the tangible object, but on the concept of the garden, of the family, of the job.
Like even animals, they have live in the world of concepts. They know which is their mother, their father, which is their food, where is their home, which way to go to walk towards the water. But any wrong view arising, like the little insects, they know the ants, they know which is the path to follow, they know where their food is. But any wrong view? Any wrong view about anything arising? Because, like you say, there's no thought about visible object or sound or what is real or what is not real. Just thinking as usual, thinking with attachment all day long.
Yesterday, Hien, you told me that you think that when we are having the discussions like this, it is just the same like when we are practicing meditation. So would you like to say more about that?
Why you always call me in, auntie? So at times I understood that there is no I, there is no you.
And what is not I and what is not you?
And we are...
Just know, but what is not I and what is not you?
I was trying to...
Not through meditation.
Yes. Moment. I was coming there. So I was understood that there is no I, there is no you, but only understanding.
Pause a moment. So Lan, what is not I and not you at this moment?
As what I read, Drupa is not I. Drupa is not mine.
So this is the answer. So actually, because it's the rupa that is taken for I or me, the visible object or the seeing, which is not I or not you. So Ajahn is just trying to be a little bit specific. Instead of just saying everything is not I or not you, what is not I or not you is seeing now, visible object that's seen now, hearing now, sound now. These are the dhammas that are taken usually for I and you.
Yes.
Is this only intellectual understanding?
In me, yes.
Did Buddha teach just about intellectual understanding?
No, about realization.
So what's the path leading to understand this as naturally?
Hearing.
The
Buddha
teachings.
Teaching.
And how can you know what is the Buddha's teaching or what's not?
Just to listening to his teaching, experience.
But
by
how can you know whether this is the teaching of the Buddha or not the teaching of the Buddha? It's someone, some people who thinks and teach.
Yes, to his students.
So who's your refuge?
In the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.
And how can you have his words as refuge?
By understanding his words.
Mm-hmm. And the truth is the truth from one word to another, from this moment to other moment, exactly the same.
Yes.
So what is right understanding of the Eightfold Path? Can it understand reality right now as it is naturally, not as I who
can
am practicing?
Can.
Or I'm doing something in order to know it?
At some level.
What do you mean by some level?
If someone have enough merit, they could experience, they can understand from the first moment of hearing the teaching. If not, then they have to go to some kind of
meditation.
Not It only meditation.
Some kind of
hearing also.
Different words.
Yeah.
From the Buddha's words.
Yes.
So, who will you follow?
Follow the understanding of the Buddha.
So you listen to what?
To listening to his teaching, but I not only.
This is your idea again.
Yes.
Different from the teachings.
So, not only understand, but can maintain that understanding.
How?
By always remembering it. Thank you.
And forgetting.
Again, it's come and it go. So always kind of remember.
Is that not ignorance? Whenever there is not understanding, there must be ignorance and attachment when it's not wholesome. And to sit is not wholesome. To walk is not wholesome. To
yes.
think is not wholesome.
I think it's absolute. It's like doing nothing.
So why do?
Because compassion, maybe.
Compassion?
Not
attachment.
Me.
Attachment.
Yes, me is still attachment
because
and ignorance.
Because of attachment.
But
and
I was
also wrong view, not only attachment.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I just wonder, why after attaining the realization, Buddha did a lot of things. Is that come from compassion?
Yes,
can't say
out
Buddha
of
come.
His compassion, he taught for 45 years because he knew that only few words not enough for anyone to understand.
Yes,
realities.
Compassion arises at the same realization of a true understanding.
What is, who's the Buddha?
In form or, well, historically, no, okay, no one is Buddha.
So you don't know who's Buddha? The only way to know him is only understand his word or his teachings. Otherwise, no one knows him as Buddha, the enlightened one. Just a name.
For other traditions, they may approach the Buddha as the great compassion.
What do you mean?
Great compassion.
Yes. When you talk about his great compassion, what do you mean? If he didn't teach at all, what about his great compassion? If he didn't teach?
So I was just trying to understand. So after Buddha realized that you just said, not only just seeing the thing it is, he also can see all the cause coming to that, right?
He's the enlightened one. No one can compare to him at all.
But yes, so after that, but by the compassion, he would like to teach. And some of the arahant and some of the great students can understand at the right moment when Buddha taught. But also so many other beings could not understand.
Begin to develop.
That's why he set up all precepts, his precepts, his meditation to guiding them.
No.
Where does it say that the Buddha set up anything or set up precepts or set up meditation or set up anything?
Sorry, my words not so skillful, maybe not the right word, but what I mean that people, Buddha tried to have arising from his compassion to so that his children can understand the truth. Which is, for example, Ajahn can understand it from the moment he hearing it. For me, another being could not understand that moment.
No matter whether the people who listened to him could understand quickly and easily or just understand a little or actually even not understand at all in that lifetime, maybe understand in another lifetime, still he taught the same Four Noble Truths, the same Eightfold Path.
And meditation as well.
Where does it say that he taught meditation? What is meditation according to your understanding?
What is an example of the teaching meditation?
Yeah, it's a meditation is a way to see. Can be many different skill and method, but actually trying to the point that people can see the truth, like
it would help
other people
if
can
you
hear
could
it
give a specific example of the Buddha teaching meditation.
I was not able to. I mean, maybe taught, there is, but I don't know.
The Buddha taught that there is one path, the development of understanding, the Eightfold Path, one path developing understanding of realities. That's why for 45 years he just taught about different realities of life, like seeing visible object. He never told anyone to do anything or go anywhere, because he understood there is no one to do anything. So he just taught about the nature of realities, and he taught in ways that people could understand. So he taught in detail or simply, and for some there was a lot of understanding, for some a little understanding.
So what to do with someone with such a little understanding?
Nothing to do.
So
this is why we have to listen very carefully and respectfully, as a friend said yesterday, to hear more about what the realities are, not just follow our own idea and misunderstanding about what the Buddha taught. So forget about meditation, because the Buddha taught about the development of right understanding of realities. Otherwise, one's always obsessed with the idea of doing something, and one thinks if one sits quietly for half an hour, one's life will run more easily, there will be more mental and bodily well-being. But actually, it is the following of the wrong path, so then it becomes more and more difficult to hear about the right path and the true understanding of realities. So if there's only very little understanding, then it means there needs to be more careful consideration, more listening, more understanding. Otherwise, for sure, one will just follow one's own wrong ideas of doing something, looking for a shortcut.
I'm wondering if you've had some particular experience of your own, because even though you can't give an example of the Buddha teaching meditation practice, you are still strongly of the view that it's beneficial and the way to...
I strongly believe that meditation is also like a tool to have to understanding the truth, like a boat. We use it until we reach the true understanding. Then we have to abandon the boat at once. So
no need to listen to the teachings of the Buddha at all?
No, of course not. You
and
have
when
to
do you listen? When you practice?
Before we practice.
And so what is taught before you practice?
It was step by step,
yes.
Until the...
What is the first step?
Also for Noble Truth, Eightfold Path.
Only name, word, no understanding of this moment.
Yes, also the sense of self that we always have before we doing things.
Yes. Do you have the understanding of the Eightfold Path before practicing?
Before, no. But
because you said he taught the Eightfold Path, right? Before. This is the first step.
But after some time...
No, not after. Just the first step. What did he say about the Eightfold Path?
Right understanding.
Understand what?
I don't know.
Understand it, but what is it? If someone told me understanding it, I don't know. I don't understand at all. I have to ask, understand what?
Understand the truth.
What is the truth? The truth of what?
Is it going circle? I'm not thinking
clear. No, this is now. This is now, this moment. This is what Buddha taught. He didn't go in a circle at all.
Maybe I have some moment to think.
No, this is the first step, so you know before you practice.
Yes.
How can the practice come before the understanding?
Based on my capacity at the moment, and the understand can be very little, but then it growing to the understanding the self.
Excuse me, I thought that he said that the first step is understanding the Eightfold Path. So we now would like to know what she understand before her practice about the Eightfold Path.
The point is that if one has the idea that the first step is understanding the Eightfold Path or understanding the truth.
Is that
but
right?
One has no idea at all what the Eightfold Path is or no idea what the truth is, then it's meaningless. How can it help anything?
Sorry, I don't know how to express this.
So it means that not understanding.
Yes, if you say so.
So it's not understanding from the very beginning. The first step is not understanding.
Because you mentioned that for some of us, when we listen, there may just be very little understanding. So how can this little understanding develop if there isn't very careful consideration of what is said? Like if we just hear about understanding the truth, but we're not interested to hear what the truth is. Or we just hear about, oh, taking something for self, but no idea of what something is, then
it's
cannot...
It's difficult in this situation for me to saying out. I wish I could be
so
not so blank.
Is seeing now you?
Maybe I take
maybe
a break.
That is not conditions to have more and more understanding.
I think what Ajahn is talking about is that can it be applied and investigated at this present moment, whatever path or practice, if I dare use that word, is followed. The question always is important to ask is, can this be applied and investigated? And without the right understanding, that application or investigation is next to impossible. So Ajahn is always reminding us that it's not necessary to go to another place, because the teachings can be applied and investigated anywhere. It's not up to a particular posture or a place. It must be... understanding must be preceded by that understanding, and understanding grows. So it's always, can it be applied or investigated? And we know that if there is, by more we listen and ponder and consider, this, that what we have heard can be applied and investigated.
Yes, I agree.
Okay. I want to come back to my questions. Because
not the first step.
Okay.
This is the first step. The understanding of whatever is now, because right awareness is aware of it by conditions. No one can make it arise at all. No one can have the idea to go somewhere and have it arise. But each moment is conditioned. Even right awareness, which is directly understanding that which appears as it is, seeing is not the object which is seen. At moment of understanding, seeing, it understands what? The reality, which has no shape and form, no color, no tree, but that which experiences. Begin to understand the faculty of experiencing, that it's no one at all, only a moment of experiencing. And this is first step to understand, in order that Panya begins to develop. Otherwise, how to understand seeing as a self?
Yes, I agree with this.
So, will you go to sit?
Yeah.
Again, to know what?
Because this understanding...
To know what?
Because this understanding, like the candle to me, it's like a falling light, but it's like maybe it's going, because moment.
No.
So I would like to deepen that understanding.
This is your idea, and someone's idea, but not the teachings of the Buddha. Because of his words, one begins to understand. Dhammang saranang kacchami. Dhamma, the teachings of the Buddha, is my refuge. Not the other words, which that's not bring about the understanding of whatever is heard at all. Like, be aware. What is awareness? No understanding of it. How can it arise? No question, just follow. It's not what Buddha taught.
When it's the idea, I would like to do, I would like to practice, I would like to apply, then no understanding, so it will be wrong practice, and wrong practice doesn't lead to right understanding, it just leads to more wrong practice.
We spoke before and you said that it takes careful consideration. Can you just explain what it means by, well, what is careful consideration? If I'm not considering it, do you know what I mean?
Whatever appears now is conditioned to arise, is that careful. And as soon as it arises to see, only seeing arises and falls away, is that careful. The following moment cannot see because it's not the seeing. So no eye. The more we understand the truth of reality, it's the way to have less and less to attach to the idea of self. But it's not the direct understanding, so that it's more than just listening, but it's the direct experiencing of the nature of realities that have been known and learned before. Another step of intellectual understanding is patipatti.
And what, and the nature of your question, Axel, I understand is that, from what I'm hearing partly anyway, is that we have this, such a strong idea of self that must somehow be in there. And Ajahn was just reminding us that whatever reality appears can be considered for its own nature, its own realness. Is it real or not? That is, and that consideration, both at an intellectual level and at deeper levels, can build upon itself without the need for careful consideration by a person. But it does seem like somewhat contradictory, but I don't believe it is. It's because we have accumulated the tendency of ignorance that's such so strong and so vastly for so many lifetimes. The idea of development without a person somehow doing something, it's almost impossible to contemplate.
And when one hears that this is the first step and then follow, is that careful hearing, considering?
And it is consideration of what one has heard about the way things are in reality. Just hearing that there are different moments of consciousness, some are wholesome, some are unwholesome, some are resultant. For example, we can have some very superficial appreciation of what that means, but no real understanding of it. And it is by reflecting on what we've heard that it becomes more understood, just at an intellectual level at first. This is what careful consideration refers to. It means reflecting on what has been heard, and appreciating the extent to which it applies to the present moment. So it's not just information or book knowledge, but it is about the present moment. And that's the careful part. That's why it's difficult.
Like yesterday, we talked about a lot of different realities, about seeing what is seen, visible object, hearing what is heard, sound, about wholesome mental factors, unwholesome mental factors. So Vajan asks, what is the truth now? If one just says, oh, I don't know, I'm not really very interested, or I can't put it into words, it's not careful consideration at that moment. But now there is seeing, there is visible object. Actually, it's the truth at this very moment. So beginning to consider that actually there is just one world appearing, visible object only, at that moment. There is living alone just with that which is seen for an instant. And when there is considering that these are just different elements, no one there at all, so no one who can do anything, then it is the beginning. It is the careful consideration of different realities, and only this can possibly lead to any understanding of the Four Noble Truths. Otherwise, if one just mentions the Four Noble Truths or the Eightfold Path, actually it's not careful considering, because it's just repeating some words one's heard. But what about life at this very moment? What is real now? What can be known now? That is the careful consideration.
The more one appreciates the value of careful consideration after a while, the less one will see the need to have a special practice designed to focus on certain things, because it is the involuntary reflection and thinking over and turning over what one has heard and relating it to the present moment that begins the development of understanding.
And the Buddha taught about the right development of calmness and also the right development of understanding. He taught all about this, but not the way you are told.
So it's not a matter of how much we listen or how much we read, like these friends mentioned. They just came to one discussion for a short time when we were last in Vietnam, but afterwards there was careful considering and reflecting on what had been said, and they began to consider that maybe what they'd been taught in the meditation center can't be right, because maybe it's not about the truths that can be known now in daily life. So they were interested to consider and discuss and reflect more, which is why they came to hear more about different realities. So it's the careful consideration that actually leads to more understanding, not just hearing the words or repeating the words.
Do you think that you can attain enlightenment from meditation or just sit or walk? So what is the purpose of doing so?
To have that understanding.
Of what again?
Of seeing.
Not now?
Yes, now.
Why not? Because seeing now can be directly aware of, not at the moment. Yes. So why go? Exactly the same. When you go, seeing is just like now. No difference. No understanding is no understanding, no matter where. Or is there any techniques to know?
About
what you want to know when you go there?
No. I don't know.
I think that behind practices, I think there's a wish for result. Like we mentioned earlier, that when we had just little understanding, when we hear the teaching, then what should we do? Or we cannot do anything. So because we think that there should be a way so that we can avoid the conditions as such that we are not having enough understanding. So I think that once we can see that it is just our wishful thinking which is motivating our wish to do some kinds of practices. And also when we do some kind of practices, we also have many experiences, and we might think that they are beneficial or they are understanding or certain things. So maybe we can just put aside a little bit and then understand what the Buddha taught, and then after that we can see all those things in a different light.
Okay.
I would like to share, before we come here, we have been in meditation for 4 years before, and we was always asking ourselves, because meditation we need to observe the feeling, a lot of things. So who observe? Then because the Buddha says no self, so we asking ourselves who observe? There should be an I. And every day we meditate 1 or 2 hours. 1 hour at the morning and 1 hour at the evening. Sometimes we don't, and we feel guilty, and it's not lead to any enlightenment. We feel a lot of attachment to that, and there must be something wrong. And the time that we came to hear Ajahn for one day, only one morning. We see that before practicing, we need to understand. Then from there, we read more books and ask more people, ask of experience and what and why and a lot of questions. Yeah, not only meditation, we see that meditation doesn't help.
Thank you.
So this is careful consideration when one questions what one's been told, just because one's told this is the way and this is what one must do. But if one doesn't question, well, why must I do it? What's the point of following? Who is this I that can observe feelings? It's the questioning that leads to the careful considering, and so hearing more about what is right and what can be proved to be true.
And why on feeling? See, no reason at all. Making choice. It's not the way to understand that even right now, each reality is conditioned, so it appears and disappears.
And some people say that their meditation leads to more well-being during the day, but what is the well-being if it's not just more pleasant feeling? But we know pleasant feeling arises with attachment, not just with kusala or calm. So usually the pleasant feeling that we're so concerned about during the day, like having pleasant experiences, is the pleasant feeling with attachment, and we think that it's calm because it feels very tranquil and comfortable, but actually it's just the pleasant feeling with attachment that we find so important.
Wrong purpose from the very beginning.
I want to ask about the consideration. We talk about considering what we've heard about the Dharma and with what the reality is. So I would like to understand it. What it is different from thinking, because thinking is a reality. So is considering a reality, or it is just a concept?
Have you heard about manasikara cetasika? Manasikara is not panya.
No.
Manasikara arises with each moment of citta. It attends to the object according to whether it is the result of karma, which condition is arising at that moment. It just attends to the object. It cannot be more than that. But while listening, no one at all. It's the succession of the rapidity of the arising and falling away of citta and cetasikas, and citta experiences, and passa contact, and feeling feel, and manasikara attends to the object more and more, because it's not just hearing the sound. After hearing the sound, there must be memory, remembering the character of that sound to know its meaning in any language. And then at that moment, manasikara or attendance, a characteristic which is attending to the object, attends to each reality from hearing to thinking, wisely or unwisely, so that panya can arise. And panya arises with attention too. Many cetasikas arise together at moment of wholesomeness.
So then it's considering, there is thinking with attention at each of those moments, but it just depends on the kind of citta, whether it is thinking wisely or unwisely. Like there can be thinking or considering about the Four Noble Truths. So there can be thinking and attending wisely or unwisely. So it's not a matter of the subject matter, Four Noble Truths, but it just depends whether there is any understanding and wise considering at that moment. So considering in this context is referring to wise considering. So citta accompanied by panya and other wholesome cetasikas such as manasikara, and then it is yoniso, wise attending.
So manasikara,
is a chetasika.
Yes. And it arises with every single citta. So as Ajahn said, if it's a moments of vipaka result, then it's not wisely or unwisely. But when the cittas are kusala or akusala, it attends wisely or unwisely.
So thinking is another thing.
Thinking is a general term for mind or activity, right? Okay. So there can be thinking about what is seen at the present moment, what is heard, and there can be thinking about the meaning of what we've just been discussing. In a day, there needs to be thinking in order to recognize people and things and words. That kind of thinking, of course, is usually accompanied by attachment. So it's unwholesome. There's manasikara, but it's unwise attention. Manasikara, the mental factor, arises with every moment of thinking. Later in the day after this discussion, one may be having lunch and there comes back to mind something that was said during the discussion. One finds oneself doing an activity but also thinking about what has been discussed earlier. And that is the kind of consideration we're talking about. It's not a deliberate act. I should think about A, B, spend some time thinking. It's spontaneous, naturally arising consideration of what one has heard about the teachings. If the citta is wholesome at that moment, then that's wise consideration.
So at each of those moments of thinking, citta arises accompanied by many citta seekers. So at those moments of thinking, if the citta is kusala, the citta seekers arising with it are also kusala, and vice versa. So the thinking is just a shorthand for citta and citta seekers arising together. And Viola, yesterday you made a comment between good and bad, difficult to say one is right and one is wrong. So let's say the difference between a moment of kindness and a moment of attachment. Can one say that kindness is wholesome or worthy of being developed, and attachment is unwholesome and not to be developed? Or that wise consideration leads to beneficial result. Wise consideration leads to the development of more understanding about the truth of life, but unwise consideration just leads further and further away from the understanding of life.
But also kind consideration or great consideration and kindness and compassion, these qualities, if we want to call it that, don't they rise by themselves? Like, or how can you develop kindness? How can you develop the things that you said just before? They don't just come by themselves, and I just try to explain in a simple way, okay, because I don't have a lot of skills. But for example, a person that is very kind and have a lot of these great qualities is just because this is how it is. It's not because it develop or put an effort to do it. Otherwise, if you have an intention or there is a thing in mind, there are things that I want to be kind, I want to be nice, is again an awesome situation. So if something is, is perfect how it is. Nothing have to be pushed to be something or practicing. That's what I was trying to say. And sometimes can be misleading, like a lot of people that get in touch with Buddhism and that I want to become a better person because I want to. And again, it's again very misleading. It's very hard to don't get.
Right. But that person who has the natural inclination may or may not appreciate the value of the wholesome quality, because some people are by nature generous, for example, or kind, but they may not appreciate the importance of developing that and other kinds of wholesomeness.
But so, appreciation, what's appreciation?
Exactly.
Exactly. This may always involve someone that is appreciating something.
No, not necessarily. You could say kindness involves someone being kind.
How can you appreciate without a self? That is, when that's what I was telling before, I believe that the understanding, there is in the understanding, there is no appreciation, there is not all these things. If there is still appreciation of what's been done, it's still involved.
I mean, a kind of understanding, appreciation in that sense, understanding the worthiness of the mental state, that kind of appreciation. So if there's understanding of the value of the wholesome moment, that's a condition for its development, no person. But if there's not that understanding, then there's just the gradual accumulation of more of the tendency, because more moments of wholesomeness, but one can't call it the development of that quality.
I don't know, I just don't understand how can something be accumulated, something can be accumulated like personally, you know what I mean?
So this is what is meant by bhavana, by development, by being with a wise person, wisely considering or wisely attending to what they say. That happens naturally by conditions. There doesn't have to be a person in there, and we'll know over time that is so, because there has been the wise reflection on what has been heard. Because what I'm hearing is like almost somebody trying to chase their tail, and that's not about bhavana, that's about a self thinking about different concepts in ways that I don't think are helpful. It can appear that way because there has been the vast accumulation of ignorance and the idea of a self, and that is something that we can't unstop because that's not the nature of things. However, when there can be the wise consideration of what we're hearing, that makes some sense. That doesn't mean to say that self will disappear or go away, because it won't. Ignorance is so strong. And what is also being said is there are good kusala and or akusala, bad, whatever word you like to use, qualities. They are inherent in the nature of things. Some qualities like giving and sharing, wisely considering what is presently arising, wisely considering what is heard, they are skillful kusala qualities. And the more there is of that kind of development, that kind of bhavana, which when we were talking earlier today about dana, sila, bhavana, bhavana will naturally by itself help sila, which Ajahn was pointing out. It's not about good by itself. It can be kusala, it can be akusala, or sila, as she was saying, relates to a behavior. So the more bhavana, that will help sila, that will help concentration. But if we somehow try to figure it all out from a certain point of view, it may not be helpful. I don't know.
All these things that we think are happening, that we think a self is doing, are just jitta and jitasika and rupa. There is no being here that is doing these. These realities are arising in split seconds within the space of doing that. Thousands have, whatever her number, have arisen and fallen away. They're all arise by conditions. There's nothing that you or I can do, because there is no you or I to do it. This is the hardest thing to understand, but it's all on the basis of conditions causing these jitta and jetasika to arise and do something and perform a function and do something. So when we talk about wise consideration, it's not like I can sit here and say, okay, 4 o'clock today we're going to do wise consideration. It doesn't work that way. It works only that the proper conditions are there for the thought to arise in the mind, that i.e. that certain citta and jetasika have arisen, so that thought arises to do, to have that thing, that particular action or whatever occur, okay? So it's not, And then it's also rupa. You think, okay, but it's still me thinking. It's not you thinking. This is very hard to learn. It is not you thinking.
But that's exactly what I was talking about. Like, if we start from this point, that is very simple and very true. There is nothing else that need to be done. And it's like, it seems to me like an apple that is on a tree. And there are part of the apple that are a little bit more ripe, but a little part of the apple that is not ripe yet. And it's an apple, okay? A big, awesome apple. And all little part of the apple, like people, want to try to be in another part of the apple or want to be ripe or whatever, instead to just understand that the apple will ripe by itself.
What is gusala and what is akusala? In other words, if there's the thought that I want to be this or I want to do that, then that is also entailed in wrong understanding. So it's basically the understanding that of the nature of these citta and cetasika that arise and do these, perform these functions. Where you think, I'm deciding I'm going to come here, I'm deciding I'm going to go there, I'm going to do this or do that. And it's not, there's no you to decide to do that. This would take, the only thing I could say to you is do a lot of reading of the Buddha's teaching, and when the thought arises to think deeply about it, then there will be deep thought about it. And when the conditions are right, there will be some understanding of what's going on.
Viola, let me make one comment as well, the one that brought you into it. So let's talk a little bit about just one quality, kindness or friendliness. We have a word, metta, in Pali. So as you've mentioned, some people are very kind by nature. They have a lot of kindness in the day. And that's how it is. And some other people may think they really want to be the good person or the kind person. And at those times, their idea is motivated by, I want to be. And so instead of leading to more kindness, actually it just leads to more attachment to me wanting to be this kind of person. And there's no acceptance of life as it is at those moments, which I think is your point. But if there is no careful consideration, for example, about the quality of kindness, like one may think when one's being kind to one's child or helping one's child, or whenever one goes to the temple and looks after other people, that there is a lot of kindness. But it may just be one's assumption, because one knows that now that actually the nature of citta changes from moment to moment. So one makes an assumption about good behavior or kind behavior, but actually when there is a little more careful consideration and honesty, it becomes obvious that most of what we take for kindness in a day, like when we're looking after our family members or helping people at lunchtime, most of the time it's actually attachment, not kindness at all. The feeling is pleasant. Maybe the other people are happy, but really there's attachment to being a kind person, attachment to the gift we're offering, attachment to the people we're helping. Why are we just helping our family members or Ajahn, for example? So it's not a matter of do or not do or should or not should. It's a matter of understanding. By understanding or carefully considering more about the nature of what kindness is, and how the near enemy of kindness is attachment, and how easily we're fooled in a day, it leads to more honesty, more truthfulness about the nature of life. And it doesn't matter for the others whether it's real kindness or attachment. Who knows? No one can tell by the outer appearance. But by carefully considering or developing more understanding, there's a little more honesty about how life really is. And more precious still is to understand that kindness when it arises is not my kindness. It's just a reality, just an element, just a mental factor that arises for an instant and falls away immediately, not worth clinging on to at all. So whether it's attachment or kindness, in the ultimate sense, they are just impermanent elements. And like you suggest, there can be the understanding can actually lead to more of the acceptance or detachment from life at this moment and less clinging to being a certain way. So what you think is worthy, accepting life as it is, actually comes about through understanding more about the nature of life, through the nature of different kinds of realities, and more honesty with how life really is at this moment. So no shoulds or shouldn'ts involved.
The understanding is that kindness can be cursular and or uncursular?
Kindness is always kusala, but often that which is akusala, clinging, is taken or assumed to be kindness. For example, at a moment of looking after one's children or the person that one's very attached to, one assumes that it is kindness, but what about the attachment at that moment? No matter whether it's with kindness or attachment, the feeling is pleasant and one would like to help, and the outer appearance is one of good deeds. But no one can tell from the outer appearance. Only right understanding can know at that time whether it is kusala or akusala. So it's not the word, it's the nature of the citta at that moment.
So what we take to be a good deed now is really moments of wholesome and unwholesome mental states. But Sarah's point is the more one considers and reflects on the nature of the wholesome and unwholesome mental states, and they are seen as they are, that is the condition for the degree of wholesomeness to improve, so that there is more wholesomeness and less unwholesomeness. Because at the moment there's no way of distinguishing between wholesome mental states and subtle unwholesome ones.
The other thing I'd like just to explain more a bit about is the Buddha's teachings of karma.
Karma.
Yeah, and what is meant by karma. Just more explanation, I'm not sure.
We have talked about how some moments of consciousness now are result, like seeing and hearing, are result of past deeds, and some can be described as being cause, those that are wholesome or unwholesome. The thinking about what has been seen and heard is either wholesome or unwholesome. And those moments of wholesomeness and unwholesomeness accumulate and may in the future condition action or deed through body or speech that is of sufficient strength to bring result in the future. So deeds are karma, and they bring result in the future in the form of one's rebirth as a human being or another realm, or what is seen and heard during the course of one's life.
Is intention real?
No.
Intention?
Yes.
Yeah. So intention is intention. Sometimes it's wholesome intention and sometimes it's unwholesome intention. And the reality of intention is the cetasika, which coordinates the other cittas and cetasik, which coordinates other cetasikas and citta it arises with to do or to form whatever it intends. That's why when there is good intention, like giving or whatever, at that moment, it has been done. So it's karma, which is wholesome. That would like the other to be good or understand, to be good friend, not giving the false or the lie. So at moment of the, any deed is done, it can produce, it is conditioned to produce the citta, which is its result. Like seeing now, no one can have seeing of this or that at will at all. It depends on the karma, which will condition a certain moment. When the object is unpleasant, the unwholesome deeds which has been done condition seeing consciousness to arise to see.
Because we have said that actually in life there is only citta, chetasika and rupa, to be very precise, karma is a chetasika, and that chetasika is chetana, translated as intention, and chetana is a chetasika that arises with every single citta when it arises now at moments of seeing or hearing. It is a result of karma. The chetana and the other mental factors are also the result of karma, vipaka. So at those moments, the chetana cannot condition or lead to further results because it is itself result. But when the chetana or intention arises with kusala or akusala chittas, that chetana itself, if it is sufficiently strong or powerful, can itself lead to results in future. So this is why you may have heard us talking in the main sessions about three rounds of vipaka, which refer to moments of citta and chetasikas, which are result. Kilesa, that is defilements that arise on account of the results, and karma. So there are these rounds in life again and again. Vipaka, kilesa. Actually, there are kusala and akusala and karma, which will bring results. So if there's just a thought of kindness now, the chetana that arises with that thought of kindness is not strong enough to bring a result. But when there is the thought of kindness, that kindness motivates some speech or deeds to help the other, then the chetana is stronger, and that chetana at that moment can bring about results. So kusala chetana brings about good results, and akusala chetana brings about bad results.
So if I have intention to do a good deed, the intention is akusala because it is followed with its attachment, which means then it is accumulating akusala, and then the citta or the karma is akusala as well.
When we talk about the mental factor of intention, it's different from the conventional idea of intending to do something. Every moment has intention with it. If it's a deed done accompanied by wholesome mental states, the intention is wholesome, and any result will be kusala vipaka. It means pleasant result. But intending to do a good deed is not the same as doing a good deed. As you say, there can be the idea of self. It may be a lot of unwholesomeness involved, and then it wouldn't be a good deed necessarily. Different moments, different degrees of wholesomeness and unwholesomeness.
And like other mental factors, karma accumulates. So earlier we were talking about the harm or danger of when there is wrong idea. For example, if there is wrong understanding of following a practice, that wrong understanding accumulates, and it accumulates to the degree that it conditions speech and deeds which can bring bad results in future. And intention with moments of kindness accumulates, and if it accumulates, it eventually leads to speech and deeds which can in turn bring results. So good and bad mental states accumulate by another condition, and this is how they can lead to the point where the chetana is strong enough that it conditions good or bad karma. At moments of careful considering now, when there's careful considering and understanding, it is kusala karma that can bring results in future.
Is there now karma this moment?
Yes.
Kusala or akusala? Wholesome or unwholesome?
I cannot say.
Whenever there is understanding, it's wholesome or unwholesome?
Wholesome.
So this is the course that has been done, and it will condition its vipaka result later, no matter in this life or what life to come.
So now kusala understanding is conditioned from previous karma, and now is the result?
At moment of understanding, it's karma, which is done, and it will be conditioned for the arising of birth, or seeing, or hearing, which are its result later.
That understanding or considering has been accumulated, otherwise it wouldn't arise now. So it's been accumulated from wise understanding and considering in the past, and when it arises now, at that moment, it is karma that will bring results.
And we said earlier that moments of seeing and hearing are result. So it is hearing about the way things are in reality that is a condition for the understanding that has been accumulated to arise. If that understanding arises, it is because it's a very strong degree of wholesomeness. Even though there's no deed of body or speech, it can condition result in the future. Hearing about the way things are and reflecting on it, there cannot be the understanding to arise, because understanding, even though it's been accumulated in the past, cannot re-arise on its own account. It needs the hearing of the way things are from someone else to condition its arising from time to time, until it becomes of such a strength that, yeah.
So we learn that there are 24 main conditions, and just now we're talking about two. So karma condition is one condition for not just cittas and citta seekers to arise, but karma also conditions rupas. And another condition is the accumulation of mental tendencies. So the kindness or the aversion now accumulates, and this is by another condition. So learning about different accumulations as they apply to realities appearing now is the way to understand that whatever arises has to arise because of particular conditions, not by anyone's will at all.
Is it interesting?
Yeah.
So the arahat also have karma, still have karma, because many conditions he chitana in the past.
For the arahat, yeah, there are conditions to experience the result of past karma, still painful bodily feeling, pleasant bodily feeling, seeing, hearing, still there will be the results of karma during that lifetime only, but no new karma that will bring results in future. So at the end of that life, no more rebirth.
But the karma have been done in the past.
Before becoming arahata.
Yeah, before, yes. So
will bring results just for the rest of that lifetime only.
So then no more, so no more karma can result.
After becoming, having becoming arahata, instead of kusala, which will bring result, it is not kusala because it cannot condition any result after his death. So all these are kiriya only, inoperative. Kiriya citta for arahatas.
Kiriya.
That's why when arahata sees no attachment, no aversion, when he does anything through speech and deeds, it's not that which will bring result, because no condition, because the conditions of the result and the karma must be ignorance. which bring attachment, aversion, and all akusala.
So every day, there are many, many uncountable moment, and many, any of them can be
vipaka of from the previous life or from previous days.
And also, it's condition for future.
And kiriya citta only, no more akusala and even kusala kama.
But not an arahat. Not an arahat. We like.
So now, seeing, hearing, result of karma in the past, we have no idea karma from last life, previous lives, or when, but many, many countless moments of result from previous karma. But the kindness or the anger that may arise now, this is not the result of past karma. This is the accumulation of those tendencies. And for the arahat at the end of life, so during the rest of his life, still the results of karma, but because the cause of new of birth is ignorance and attachment, and at the end of that life, no kusala or akusala, no latent tendency of attachment or ignorance, so no condition for rebirth. So at the end of that lifetime, no results of karma, no more results of karma.
No more place for karma anymore.
Exactly.
Right? Is it like that? Okay. Can you explain more about right understanding and right attention in Eightfold Path? The difference between that?
Actually, the intention is misleading translation, because usually intention is translation of chetana chetasika, which we said is karma. So actually the second one, the second fact of the Eightfold Path is samasankapa. Actually it refers to vitaka chetasika, another mental factor. And this is a mental factor that arises not at moments of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, but at every other moment in life, touching the object. So at moments of thinking, there is vitaka arising at each moment. And just as the attention can be wise or unwise, the vitaka can be wholesome or unwholesome.
Again, please, the second one, how to translate it?
Vitaka. V-I-T-A.
Vitaka. In English, how to?
Usually it's translated as thinking, but...
Right, thinking.
This can also be misleading.
And how about right concentration? Because we were taught a lot different between vipassana meditation and samadhi meditations. And is it concentration? Samadhi is samadhi is concentration, and vipassana is just observe.
The path factor of samadhi refers to the mental factor that is called ekagata, one-pointedness. It's what helps the citta to take one object only. Ekagata arises with every moment of consciousness. It's one of the universal mental factors. So in the context of the Noble Eightfold Path, it refers to the ekagata mental factor that arises at moments when there is awareness and understanding of the true nature of a reality. Because, as we said yesterday, the eight path factors are co-arising mental factors at a moment of understanding.
And right understanding is panya?
Yes. Samadhiti is panya.
Panya,
chetasika.
So samadhiti have different quality and level.
Yes.
Like this understanding of ultimate truth.
Yes.
There's only three ultimate truths now. Citta, Cittasika, and Rupa. So just understand that. Is that panya? Right understanding?
If you don't call it panya, it's understanding. Right? Understanding as well. So it's just a name for that certain reality.
So when is it called panya?
when you like to call it.
But it's different level.
Certainly.
Like the same understanding, the same...
Different levels.
Same level.
Direct understanding is different from intellectual understanding.
Okay.